Hey, it's Scott Hanselman, and this is the Hansel Minutes on Channel 9. I'm here with the one and only Johnny Lee. How's it going? You work for Microsoft now.
Yes, I do.
You've been here a couple years.
I joined back in June, but I actually didn't really start working on a project until August. I had a few months of still traveling and giving talks and finishing up graduation from Carnegie Mellon.
Yeah.
So I've only been there for a few months, but it's been a very educational, interesting few months being there.
Rock on. And your title is researcher?
Yeah, so I'm in a research group inside of Microsoft Hardware, technically. It's called the Applied Sciences Group, and we're sort of like an internal consulting group to all of entertainment and devices in D&D, and we help with a lot of their hardware-related adventures. So that includes Surface, Xbox, mice and keyboards, webcams, and other devices which might be interesting to Microsoft to think about other than some of the existing portfolio.
Now, you're a bit of a legend on the web because of your Wiimote hacks some of the crazy stuff you do making your own kind of portable Surface type stuff. Is that how you got the job?
Well, I knew I had a lot of contacts at Microsoft Research. I had interned there, and through my academic publishing record, actually I already had a lot of colleagues at Microsoft. The Wiimote stuff certainly helped in terms of spreading my reputation around the company, so getting a job was definitely easier than had it been normally. But I was already talking with a lot, I already had a lot of research colleagues there, and I was interested in going to Microsoft as one of my top choices anyway. So.
Now, what is the difference between academic publishing and what I think of as academic publishing? Like for me, when an academic publishes something, they put an awesome video on YouTube and they have a great page with some source code, and I'm like, rock on, they published. Is academic publishing still publishing something in some obscure font, like the academic font? It's like the little curly extra serifed font with like, and it's got equations, publishing. Did you do both?
I don't know if that's still the criteria for academic publishing. So funny you say stuff like posting up YouTube videos and putting up source code, because from an academic community, that's not counted at all. In fact, that's superfluous. In fact, I got almost no academic review credit for essentially my YouTube exposure, except just general exposure that people know who I am now. And what academic publishing typically means is doing a peer-reviewed journal or peer-reviewed conference. So you submit, you write up a technical document about what you did, usually like 4 to 10 pages, and that's the paper that actually gets recognized as the academic body of work. And that gets reviewed by 5 or 6 people in your field, and if it's accepted, you present it at a conference. Mm-hmm. And then it gets archived. Probably the most important part is that it's a peer-reviewed, and then it's archived in digital format in what's called the ACM Digital Library, which is an archive of all the academic and intellectual work done inside of academia, or sometimes inside of research institutions. But getting exposed to the public and making a product out of it definitely are not criteria in terms of the academic review system.
And is that, why did you put it out? Why did you bother? Because it means like if you bothered, that must mean that there is some multiplier of additional people out there who aren't doing what you did. They're not taking the awesomeness and putting it out there.
In fact, I'm pretty disappointed. And when I have an opportunity to talk to a more academic publishing crowd, I try to encourage the fact that if their target goal is to simply do a 10-page obscure paper in an obscure conference that goes in a private, obscure digital archive, no one's going to read it and no one's going to actually use the ideas. And in computer science and interface technology, the ideas are only valuable if they actually transfer out. So it's up to the authors of the academic work to spread their knowledge. And if they, at the very least, they can just put up a video of the academic work they do. Now, the funny thing about the YouTube videos, I actually did not make an academic paper out of those, because in truth, a lot of the concepts in the videos are very old from an academic standpoint. Some of the head tracking stuff is from the early days of virtual reality. The Wiimote whiteboards is very basic computer vision work that's been done decades ago. But these ideas are sitting there collecting dust and no one's doing anything with them. So part of the exercise of making those videos is simply taking good research concepts and actually sharing them with the world and helping them get into product. And that's kind of the role I'm taking on at Microsoft now, where I'm sort of in a, at a very high level, one could say that my job is kind of tech transfer. I try to sit between Microsoft Research and Microsoft product teams and then look at what ideas have been sitting in the academic archives that really should be pushed out. And since we're sort of getting past the mouse and keyboard and web technologies that's really sort of changing the way computing is done, there's a lot of exciting, there's an eagerness for change versus there was priorly an eagerness to optimize for the previous experience, which was the mouse and keyboard office worker.
One of the things that made me a huge fan of yours was that you actually did stuff as opposed to just talking about it. And it was such a multidisciplinary thing. I mean, read all your stuff, I loved it, I understood it, but I don't think I could have recreated it. I mean, in the sense of, it wasn't just writing code, but it was also understanding circuitry and assembling things and getting the right parts. I mean, you know, I could go down to Radio Shack, but I don't know if I could have got the right number of LEDs and put together a breadboard. You actually did it and pushed it and pushed it, and pushed it until it was actually completed. It was very, very representative of a very thorough. And then you didn't just do one experiment, you did multiple. Is that just part of your personality, or is that something...
Maybe it's part of my personality. People have asked me where that comes from. In particular, when it comes to talking to students in universities, how do I teach that skill set? I recently gave this talk at the University of Washington and MIT about four stages of a successful project, and that it's basically four components, which is first having the creativity to come up with the ideas, having the right perspective to choose which ones to work on, then having the skill sets to actually execute them, and then the willingness to share them. Now, that sort of sounds pretty straightforward, but they actually break down on four very different tasks and four very different skill sets. And it's very rare to find people that are good at all four. And if you can do that, and if you work on the components which are your weaknesses, you can then create a complete holistic project which goes out. So in my field of work, people who are able to go from concept to prototype is very valuable, and everything in between. And not everyone's always good at going from prototype to selling it to upper management or to the public, whoever it might be, to go from prototype to product, which is a whole other step.
So. Okay. I have one last technical question, because this is something that I've always wanted to do, and I don't understand why it hasn't happened, but I don't have the skill set to make it happen.
Okay.
There are so many webcams, and it's such a pervasive thing now to have a webcam staring at you through a peephole. And we're all off trying to figure out capacitive touch screens, but we've got a $5 lens looking at us already. Why can't I move windows aside just with hand gestures? My hands are pink enough, and they certainly have enough contrast against me. I'm not necessarily looking for fine-grained control of the mouse with my hands,
but
for God's sake, if I've got four monitors, let me shove a few things around and dock things to the side. Why is that not happening?
So the root of what actually would have to do that is computer vision algorithms. And if you follow the computer vision research, the progress in robustness has been pretty slow. But in the recent couple years, there's some new algorithmic approaches which have made tracking hands and tracking objects using tracking uninstrumented objects and uninstrumented hands with a normal camera or webcam have become much better, to the point where they're actually usable. And based on, that's one of the areas in which I'm interested in taking some ideas, because Microsoft Research and those other universities have a lot of really good computer vision work, and I think it's prime ready to actually turn into product. Like the camera in the Wii Remote is extraordinary because it has built-in computer vision. The camera does dot tracking recognition. So coming off the... At the hardware level. So basically the silicon has gotten cheap enough to make the algorithms and the processing power cheap enough to make this little sub $10 component do fairly basic but very useful computer vision. And I think the economics and the economics are coming down to the point where that's plausible to execute in a product, and the algorithms are getting good enough that they can actually be useful for an application. And I think we're coming to that cross section. So I think in general, doing stuff with cameras is going to be an interesting area for interface research and general applications. Like, for example, cell phones have cameras, and if they had really good computer vision, they can actually recognize anchor points in the environment, so you can actually just move the camera and it realizes the positions of the phone itself. So you can actually turn a phone into a 6-degree freedom screen, and so you can move the screen as if there was an object in front of you. And those algorithms are just getting to the point where that's reliable enough and robust enough and fast enough to actually be done in a product. So I think that'll come.
How much
that may
is
have been
it?
A longer answer.
No, but that's a very good question, because there's a thing, I think it was called No Touch, it was put out, where it was like you know, you put your finger out, you put something on it, and then you mark it, and you said uninstrumented. So you instrument your hands, and you know, your projects involved instrumentation of your hands, they involved instrumentation of the wall such that you could register the shape of a projector. But the thing that I don't understand is that my hands are already instrumented. They're shaped like hands.
Yes, except your hands actually have changed shape, and then also.
But there's a finite number of ways it can look, isn't it? I mean, don't I get plus one intelligence for having hand-shaped hands?
A little bit. I mean, there's over 32 degrees. There's almost 30 degrees of freedom inside the hand. So if you create an algorithm which can track all of that, it needs to work. It also has to work in different lighting. Like if we don't control, this is a very yellow lighting. We're in some conference. There's spotlighting. We're outdoors. It's sunlight. And that's actually one of the biggest problems in computer vision, is dealing with uncontrolled lighting conditions. And there's new camera technologies which are coming out, which either do infrared-based illumination, so they control the lighting.
So it'd be visible light spectrum, non-specific.
Right, so it would be independent of visible light. In fact, the way Surface works is that there's a big infrared illuminator inside, so they can do touching. And your hand acts as an infrared
reflector. So it provides a black and white, high contrast view of what's happening.
And then it's very easy to segment regardless. But even Surface is inside a closed, controlled box where they have control over all the internal environment and the relationship between the camera and the Surface. If you're just holding a webcam like that, or you're a webcam on a desk, you have much less control, and that requires the algorithms to be that much smarter. But just recently, those type of algorithms and that type of robustness against uncontrolled illumination, uncontrolled skin color, uncontrolled hand position are getting to the point where it's very useful. Andy Wilson from Microsoft Research has a really nice project, and I want to try to show a video of this tomorrow if I can get my hands on it. But your hands, doing arbitrary hand tracking is very difficult because there's so many degrees of freedom and the space essentially is too big. But if you define very simple gestures such as pinching, this actually creates a very recognizable shape, which can be non-existent or existent. And that actually creates a very, very compelling, very easy recognition for doing clicking. So I can simply unclick, click.
So I might be able to go and get my dream of grabbing a window and pushing it aside.
You just have to do this.
As long as I put my hand in a recognizable position.
In a recognizable position. In which case, you actually can get 2 degrees of input. You get some degree of Z because this changes size depending on the camera, and you can get rotation. So this is actually 4 degrees. Doing this type of rotation with a camera is a little bit difficult right now. But he has a video where he's doing actually two-handed pinching just like this with a normal webcam.
Rock on. Yeah, so. Oh. Well, you heard it here first, folks. Mix09, huge fan. Jenny Lee, hey. Mix09. Thanks a lot.
No problem.